Well, it is, again, it is good to see you guys here this evening, and I know many of you are excited that this semester has officially come to a final end for some of you, and that's a good feeling. So I commend you on your hard work and everything you've done this semester. If you've been tracking with the Church Planting Center over the past year and a half, you know that at the end of each semester we try to do some type of family type activity to do one main thing, and that is to focus on issues that pertain to church planting families. There's a lot of stuff that's out there and written about how to plant churches and why plant churches and all those things, and there are very few resources out there related to issues dealing with the family, particularly in a North American context. And so what we try to do is we try to do something at the end of each semester that is geared in that direction. For some of you, you remember about a year and a half ago, we had George and Barb Garner here with us. They had been involved in church planting for about 20-some years and had been involved in planting churches all across the United States. And then last semester, we brought in a research a team leader from the North American Mission Board to come and share with us about some recent findings that were produced related to church planting wives. And they shared that information, and we told you that a book was coming out, and when it came available, we gave a lot of these copies away to many of the ladies that were there, or all the ladies that were there that particular night. And so we're going to also give the ladies a copy of this book again tonight. And the title of it is called My Husband Wants to Be a Church Planter, So What Will That Make Me? And it's written by a lot of church planting wives. And so we want you ladies to have a copy of that as you go. It's over there on the table. If we run out, let me know, and I'll have Carrie Plevin, my secretary in the Church Planting Center, put get one in the mail to you. And also attached to that, she has added a CD resource that we have been gradually adding to and building over time. And that's a CD that is just geared toward issues related to church planting wives. And so we want you ladies to have a copy of that as well before you take off this evening. There are some flyers over there talking about the church planting program here at Southern, talking about the Nehemiah Project and internships in church planting, and really want to encourage you all to pick up some of those to think about maybe moving in that direction. But tonight, for the next 20-25 minutes or so, we're going to hear from Dustin and Laurianne Neely. They are a church planting couple and with church planting kids as well. And they are about, is it 3 years into it?
Yeah.
As of a moment ago, it's three
years.
Into the process. And so if you were here a year and a half ago, you heard from a very well-seasoned couple that had been out there for a couple decades. You heard some findings last time. We're bringing in a different perspective. We're bringing in a young couple who have just been out and about over the past 3 years in church planting. And so a lot of the stories are very fresh, and a lot of the family issues and things that they have going on are still very much on their minds and that they're addressing as well. Now, the title of our time tonight is The Blessings and Challenges of Being a Church Planting Family. Now, we want to make certain that you understand that even in the challenges, there are blessings. But I couldn't come up with a catchy phrase that would actually, you know, talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, I thought if I put that on, you know, one of our flyers, you know, I'd get all these, like, terrible emails or something.
And I would be highly insulted.
You'd be highly insulted.
Ugly, I appreciate that.
Yeah, we'd have good underneath your, you know, your wife, and then bad, the ugly underneath your title there. But it's good that you guys can be here tonight. I do want to share a passage of Scripture with you guys before we jump in. And what we're going to do is we're just really just going to kind of chat tonight. And I know this kind of setup up here is, it really kind of feels really informal, you know, the chairs on, we feel like really distant from you, but
and I want to turn in a circle too.
That's true. So if things get really exciting and they start spinning around, you know, it's just the way they deal with conflict in the planting family. No. We'll have a good time tonight, and after about 20-25 minutes, what we'll do is we'll just kind of throw it open to you guys and allow you to ask questions that you would like to ask tonight to them. And if they don't know the answers, they'll probably lie to you. No, they won't do that. But if you got some questions, be thinking about those, and we're going to throw those open to you, and then we'll probably take like maybe the last 20 minutes or so and then just do a little Q&A time as well. Let me share a passage of Scripture from Proverbs chapter 16, verse 16. It says, "Acquire wisdom, how much better it is than gold, and acquire understanding. It is preferable to silver." I'm hoping that tonight this will be an opportunity for you to grow in wisdom and understanding in maybe an area of life and ministry that you have not been able to experience yet. I'm hoping tonight will be a night that will begin a conversation process, because I know many of you are getting ready to head to the field as church planters with the North American Mission Board. Some of you may be going with International Mission Board. I'm hoping tonight we'll begin a conversation that you and your spouse will begin talking about in the home, addressing maybe some of these issues that maybe one or two of you have been thinking about along the way, but, you know, just didn't know exactly how to start that conversation process. Tonight I'm hoping some issues will be raised that you need to start talking about that neither one of you have even thought about. I'm hoping that tonight this will sort of be a catalyst to get things moving in this direction of thinking about the importance of having a healthy family, centered on the Lord and relying on His strength in that journey and that process. So I've got some questions for these guys, and I'm gonna just ask them, and we'll just kind of go from there tonight. But I guess to go ahead and start us off, I've known these guys for several years. They're good friends, and we're actually part of the same church, and so that's really neat as well. So Dustin, Laurie, and Neely, tell us about your family. We'll just start there.
Our family. Anything specific?
Children. How many children?
We have three kids.
Three children.
Fourth is on the way. They are, as Dustin says, not normal children.
We had to explain that.
I don't know if it's something that I failed at. I try to live by the Bible. I'm a therapist. I would instruct parents on behaviors, and mine are just crazy most of the time.
Yeah. Preacher's kids.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So. Worse than that, they're church planters' kids.
That's true. Praise the Lord.
They've inherited personalities that are not becoming of proper festivities as tonight.
And when they let the kids out, you'll see. They are very high-spirited. There we go.
Two boys.
We do have a boy.
And one girl that's meaner than both of them. I'm just kidding.
Boy. She could take on any boy in the room. We had our first. And Dustin was on staff at Sojourn, and our second one was 4 months away when we started the church planting endeavor. So she was actually, our first day with NAM was in a delivery room.
Indeed.
Birthing our second child. Indeed. And so
you're birthing children in churches at the same time.
That's right.
That's right.
And both are a messy process, JD.
I'm married to a very high output type A man. So
yeah.
We've had four kids in 5 years.
Yeah.
All very much part of the process.
How about that? Well, tell us a little bit about just a couple, 2 or 3 minutes. Your all's backgrounds. Where did you grow up? Where's home? And come into faith in Christ.
I'll start on that one. Small town called Big Stone Gap, Virginia. I tell a lot of stories about
small it. Small town called Big Stone.
That's right. There's no big stone there, and I'm not sure. There's definitely not a gap there, that's for sure. But it's a little armpit in Virginia, and I grew up there, and it's really interesting to be here. And I'll get into this probably a little bit later, but I didn't even know what church planting was growing up in that town. And so to come from those fundamentalist, independent, King James-only roots, and then to be kind of where I'm at, planting the kind of church that we're planting and seeing that church plant other churches has been really interesting. And it's a fantastic foundation. Came to Christ at age 12, and by God's grace, kind of stayed that course by and large, which is extremely rare, and I'm extremely thankful for that. Had an amazing family, and it was a really good foundation for me. So.
Okay. Were you in the same community?
No. I am from a small town in Tennessee.
Smaller than Big Stone.
Oh, bigger. Small town, big county.
Okay.
Big agricultural county, very large in agriculture. No, my story is very different. I think it fits more of our bill, perhaps, than maybe his did. My family's Church of Christ, if you're familiar with that. So what we're doing is light years from what I grew up with. But I became a Christian through Young Life and was discipled through Young Life. So the more of the countercultural, you know, I just, my spiritual foundation had nothing to do with church. Mm. And so there, I didn't, I mean, even through college, high school, college, and even when I met him, I didn't go to the Southern Baptist Church until Dustin and I were actually engaged. So I didn't know, I got in trouble for not knowing who the two women on the wall were. if that tells
you
anything.
Our two patron saints, so, Lottie and Annie.
And, yeah, I got chastised pretty hard for that one. I still didn't understand because they didn't even tell me at that point who they were. But
you were wondering, why are we trying to pay these women off every year? Now, what's up with that?
Yeah, I thought, why didn't you? It was years before I even knew what that they gave money to something.
Yeah,
I was like, what are the envelopes they put in these pews? You know? But so the type of church that we're planting is, it's cozy and comfortable for me.
And you guys met in college and...
Nope.
No, I didn't meet in college.
No, I was...
Really?
Part of my story, too, I traveled when I got out of college full-time as a worship leader and speaker and traveled around the Southeast, basically, and met her at an event that I had gone to do kind of a long-standing citywide Bible study kind of deal. And
I was in graduate school.
Yeah,
it was
in grad school.
Away from both of our four-year colleges.
Okay.
Indeed.
And you get your master's in... Counseling,
marriage, family therapy,
and you guys came to Louisville for seminary. Is that right?
Indeed, we did.
Okay, and so that kind of brings us up to the next question I wanted to ask you guys, and that is, tell us about your ministry experience, kind of leading up. You already mentioned the kind of the traveling, mm-hmm. Worship speaker, but kind of your ministry experience together, leading up to the planting of Crossing.
It was really funny. It really started before we got married, but absolutely the day we got married. This is a cute story and it's short, so I'll tell it. We were part of a SBC church that was in a college town in Johnson City, Tennessee, and a bunch of different people had tried to take the college ministry.
We had met at a college event.
Yeah,
we stepped
also
out of that.
In the city, but their class had never really worked, and so I've got on my tux. My pastor's standing there ready, get work, like he's got on his robe, and we're getting ready to go in and get married, and he said, you know, somebody just suggested to me recently that everybody else has tried the college class. Nobody can do it. You don't have to tell me right now because I know we're kind of busy here. But why don't, when you get back from honeymoon, just let me know if you guys would want to take over this class. And I was like, okay. And so we opened the door and went and got married. And so jump cut forward.
He told me on the way to Charleston.
Yeah, we were driving along. I'm like, oh, I think we need to do this. So anyway, just to see, like, God took that little thing, and it really was very much like a church plant. No money, no resources, really, no people. I think we started with 8 kids, and then I think a year later we had about 80 folks. And to see something go from nothing to something sustainable. And then this was extremely rare. I was actually even able to hand that off to 2 guys that I'd raised up from within. So that vision of multiplying and handing off. That was really kind of where we cut our teeth. But at that point, we still didn't even know what church planting was.
We did. So. I did the guys.
Or she did the girls.
Yeah, I did the girls.
Kind of
he did the guys.
Mm-hmm.
I was in graduate school, and he worked out of the house. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we literally had 2 years of play and just ministry together.
Mm-hmm. And then when you guys got to Louisville, you came on staff with Sojourn.
It was a while.
Well,
we were just church members there for a while, and then they approached me about coming on to be their administrative pastor. And this was funny. About 9 months into it, Daniel came to me. He was like, you know what? I just don't really think this is working out. I think we've got you in the wrong spot. And I'm like, maybe you do. Because he was like, your gifts and your talents are over in this area, and we got you making copies and doing stuff, and I just don't think this is a good fit. And you're really not very good at what you're doing. I'm like, that's right, I'm not. And so we got a decision to make here. Do we, like, transition you or find you a job or whatever? And out of this really interesting maelstrom of circumstances, that's when things began to develop.
Okay, so. And then so tell us from going from now Sojourn was a very young church at the time here in Louisville, but tell us how you went from that being on staff there to you two actually getting involved in church planting.
We paid off a lot of people.
when we moved here, we thought you had to be in a hut in Africa to do church planting. It wasn't something we came here to do. Mm-hmm. He was gonna do the typical pastor thing, but you woke up one Sunday morning.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a little bit more detail than that. That's all absolutely right. I started sharing the gospel out where we live in the East End. And I started just running into these folks that kind of didn't fit kind of the East End model of church. And the things I'm going to say, please don't hear that. Yeah, they didn't fit any suburban church model. Because this guy's like a gangbanger, basically, who got his teeth kicked out on the front steps of his apartment because he was dating some other guy's girlfriend. I mean, these are rough people. And I'm like, where am I going to take them to church? Any of these churches would welcome them. But the culture, the church culture, was so radically different from their culture, there needed to be something at least quasi-indigenous for them to connect with. And so I was like, man, somebody ought to do something about that. And so over the next few months, like, somebody became this body. And there was this watershed moment that she's referring to. I remember looking out the window on Sunday morning because those unbelievers aren't
Sojourn
going
Sojourn met in the evening.
Yeah, we were going to church at night at the time because Sojourn was renting a facility. And I was like, I think it's me. I think I've got to do this. And so started a Bible study in our house. This staff thing's going on at Sojourn.
That was a year.
Yeah, I mean, this has all been like
swirling. It wasn't a fast-paced thing.
But it was kind of a rolling snowball from that point of just what I tell people a lot of times is the need is the seed. And I just had this overwhelming, you know, urge that something's got to happen for these people. And then I grew into it.
If you can't, from that point on up until, you know, 3 years from that point on to where the church is now, can you give us like a quick overview of the church planting work from that moment of connecting those people, beginning Bible study in your home to actually, you know, meeting at
where we're meeting at,
basically.
Yeah, I'll try to do that real fast.
In 37 seconds.
No, yeah, sorry. Yeah. In the beginning, we had one community group and about 30 people from Sojourn.
Well, no,
and
wait,
then
before that.
Before that? I'm trying to really convince
I know, it. But it started initially, you and Daniel had the vision to do an East End thing. But it was 2-3 years down the road.
After that.
So
that's
when it came time for him to be just a community group leader, we just started, you know, a Linden group because there were some people that lived out there. Mm-hmm. And that went for a year, 6-8 months or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Until.
Yeah. Yeah, and so there's the timeline did kind of get compressed because we were on, which I don't know if there's a principle for anybody there or not, but some, like, you go into this deal thinking, this is my script, I'm going to do it step by step, and something happens, and your plan, it doesn't go in the trash. I disagree with that philosophy of throwing it away, but I do think that you've got to be absolutely completely flexible to edit it, and that's what happened to us was just trying to figure out, okay, here's this. And then we had a man named James Welch, who we've sent out as a church planter in New Orleans, who's planting a church there, who stepped in kind of as my other elder to kind of help things get going. Then we had, I think at that point, we had like 3 groups. And then we launched, we're primarily like kind of a cell-based model, kind of a hybrid, but predominantly a cell-based model. And so kind of trucked along, had like 100 people at our launch, and then preached those down to probably 40 by that winter. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to work out. And so
and at that time, meeting in a fellowship hall?
We were at an Episcopal church on Sunday nights. Yeah. And so had the hardest winter I ever thought possible. And then things kind of picked up a little bit. We probably picked up to probably 60-some, and then kind of went through there. And then went through the summer and then had the church double in size and got up to probably 120 and then preached those down to about 80-some. And then where we're at now, if everybody will show up, is probably 180 or so.
So in the process, moved from meeting in the fellowship hall, mm-hmm. going to a high school.
A public high school. Ballard High School.
Our high school.
Mm-hmm.
Then moving from there to the present.
We're now at a private school. In a very good situation, where they're happy that we're there as long as we pay, and we do. So they're happy that we're there, and it's great. There's a pool there. We get to baptize people on site and do stuff there. And we're actually looking to launch our second. We're not really doing multi-site. We're doing multi-service. We're having a AM service at KCD in the morning, and then we're starting a PM service actually just down the street here. On Sunday evenings, and that's all going to start this summer.
And two church playing teams have already been sent out, and probably at least several more lined up for the next few years down.
That's one huge benefit of being here close to kind of the mouth of the river. We got a guy in New Orleans who's doing very well. We got a guy in Cleveland who's doing well. And then we're looking to plant churches here in the city, and then also outside the country, and then in the greater North American area as well.
If you want me to backtrack for the women out there, my perspective on the process was not near as fun and fast-paced as his perspective.
Sure, he's got some questions.
Yeah, and that's a great segue. If we were doing a newscast right now, that would be a perfect transition. That'd be smooth. You'd think that I gave them these questions to begin with, wouldn't you?
It's just we always have two different.
I know.
That's why
when I told them, I said I want to get both of you guys up here, and I said, Dustin, I said don't do the preacher thing, let your wife talk,
and so because
I want you to hear the wife's perspective. Let's begin to talk about, now that you know kind of the really fast overview of how they got involved in church planting and kind of how that journey has been with them. Let's begin talking more specifically about family issues, things from the wife's perspective. So let's start with blessings, and maybe we'll talk about challenges. So. Blessings in that journey, in that process. What have been some of the biggest blessings of being a church planting family and going through that?
I wouldn't say that any of it has been. I mean, there have been tough times. Some of the biggest blessings, I think, even from the beginning. Like I said, my perspective is very different. When we were a part of Sojourn, it was. You know, we'd been there for almost 2.5 years, and we were very connected. Loved it. It was very much home. I had tremendously strong friendships and relationships. So when he came home and he said, I need to tell you something, as of this day, I'm not working there anymore. I just started crying, you know, because, and that's like, you know, it's oftentimes I think, church planting gets romanticized so much, and let me just say, it's I love it. I wouldn't do anything different, but it's not romantic in any shape, form, or fashion. You know, so then it wasn't like there was just this plan and it just picked up and went. We were very much back at square one. We'd bought a house 4 or 5 months earlier, but it's like, okay, what do we do from here? Do we go forward with this? You know, this is one option, but. You know, Daniel had said, I'll get you a job anywhere. Just tell me where you want to go. And he tried very hard to talk us out of planting the church. Mm-hmm. He tried very hard to talk me out of planting the church. You know, we all had this big sit down, and I said, you know, at least we're going to be together. He was working three or four jobs. We had a 12-month-old at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said, at least we'll be together. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay. So I think the biggest blessing along the way was like our lives kind of realigning. When we did ministry together in Johnson City, we played together for the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. Then we moved here. I worked. He did school. Then I was home. He worked and did school. And our lives were just really, for us, very much out of balance. So the biggest blessing has been, I mean, we do it together.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yep.
The ups, the downs, the frustrations.
What about some of the challenges? Like, I mean, what goes through the wife's mind when you realize, well, he's not going to be there. There is no established church for us to go to. We're starting from scratch. You know, we're starting with the guy with no teeth next door. And you know, I mean, how are we going to? You know, I mean, what goes through your mind when all that? When you come out of a well-established congregation. To actually nothing.
I don't think we really encountered that for when we started working for 8 or 9 months before we officially stepped out of Sojourn. Yeah. And at that point, when we stepped out, we pretty much started meeting in some form or fashion, didn't we?
For us, it was kind of more of like a fade, so it wasn't as...
Wasn't abrupt.
Thing. Yeah, and I mean, we're cutting out, for the sake of time, so many details here that some of this, if it sounds a little disjointed, it's because of the truncation. But, I mean, I would say, like, the whole notion of the fade, I think, is much healthier if you can do that as opposed to the other thing.
But it still was a delayed reality in the sense of, you know, went to that whole NAMM commissioning thing and all these women are talking about, you're going to have loneliness after your bags are unpacked. I think that was a book or something, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I was like, whatever. We're planting a church in the same town with my church, with my friends. I'm not going to have this issue. But a prideful person as I was, it was a delayed reality in the sense that, you know, 2 months after you're not seeing people on a regular basis, 2 months after you don't come into contact with your friends, when you have to, you know, your mom's day doesn't meet with them anymore. You know, there's just little bits of, you know, putting away the normal relationships that you do. And the fact that you're not guaranteed any relationships of any sort along the way. Mm-hmm. That eventually it did get really hard. And good gracious, stayed that way for the better part of 2 years. You know, of seeking relationships. And the hardest part we've had is that we have such a transient group of people. I mean, we've had 75 to 100 people to have moved away out of our church that just when you get a close relationship, they're out. You know, we've sent people off to the military as chaplain. You know, people's jobs have moved, various ministry things. And so, I mean, you...
Yeah, I think, and it's different... And fellas, you'll probably have a different experience wherever you go. Every context is different. And so you need to prepare for that. And so some of what you're hearing from us, you'll be like, man, that's going to be my story. And others, you'd be like, my story wasn't like that at all. Like, there's always difference. And the other thing, one of the challenges for us that I had to really learn to be sensitive to is I'm hanging out with people all day long. I'm going to lunch with everybody. I'm, you know, hanging out at the YMCA, working out, meeting people. But she's at home by herself. And so I would come in, and I'm like, if I see another person, I'm going to, like, shoot myself in the face. And she's like, no, we need to talk. We need to get out. We need to go hang out with people. And so trying to find that rhythm of what was right for our family.
Or even just want, you know, he has...
That was a real challenge
work
for
relationships.
Us to get through
you
that.
I mean, because a lot of people think, you know, well, we'll plant as a team. When we go plant as a team, that's going to be made. And, I mean, that can be true, but it can be just as much of a false reality because even though the men... have this great relationship, the women may not because they're bad people, but general connectivity and synergy between people. You know, you may have one introvert, one extrovert. Mm. People are not having the same goals. You know, you may have someone that's sending their kids to public school and one who's homeschooling, and the two just can't get together, you know, or different plans. And so it was harder, I think, for him to grasp that, you know, and me to have to really... work through a lot of the resentment that I had of seeing my husband walk out every day and have these great times and come in and he's telling me all about it. And I'm like, that's awesome. I just want someone who's going to agree to go hang out at a park or something, you know?
Yeah. So he would sort of come home, these exciting stories. I got a witness to this person or this person's interested in her Bible study. He's kind of on this high and you're not there. Is that kind of what you're...
Yeah, you know, and courting church prospects and, you know, just... a lot of stuff driving around all day. You know, he's got fun stories laughing up, and I'm just wondering, am I going to have a friend sometime? Yeah. You know, will I ever build back these relationships? You know, and, you know, when you have a lot of people moving or, you know, just trying to meet people in general, it can be really difficult.
And I think that it's a good point that you guys brought up the fact that you experienced these struggles in a place where your mother church was in the same city.
Yeah,
and I think about, you know, many of these folks, they're going across country in other countries, and sometimes walking into situations whereby they, you know, their mother church is, you know, hundreds of miles away, maybe thousands, and I mean, this is a real issue that people need to discuss.
And I don't want to paint a bad picture. I mean, I had great relationships. It was just my conviction that starting a community based church, if there's going to be actual community, and it's up to how many models how many people do you have to model that? It was basically us. I just didn't feel I just didn't feel like I would be true to the mission by staying connected only to that and just kind of neglecting the relationships that were floating around within right. Crossing.
Were there any other points of conflict in your marriage that were directly the result of the church planting experience other than what you mentioned?
Oh, okay. Yeah, let me speak to that one.
Before she speaks.
That's right. No, I'll tell you the story. She'll tell you the truth. How about that? No, I'm just kidding. No, for real. I think some of our people are here, so they know us in various degrees. But one thing I talk about a lot from the pulpit is, and she's not kidding when she talks about like type A and driven. Workaholism is something that I think, and I'm walking in much more gospel freedom than I would have ever thought possible. But that's always going to be a monster that's going to chase me because I love doing what I do so much. And I just got a hobby like last week when I bought a mountain bike. And before then, I would work, and then work would be my hobby. And then I would work some more. And so that was just who I was. And that will eat your soul, and that will eat your family. And sure as I'm sitting here, there was one watershed moment when I was laying on the floor playing with Nathan, who loves Thomas the Train. And I was pushing the train around, and I realized like he'd been talking to me for a couple of minutes. And I was like, yeah. And I realized that I had no idea what he was even saying and what I was even agreeing to. So he could have like asked for a car, and I'd be like, okay, son. But thankfully he's three, so it didn't matter. And it really hit me like a ton of bricks that if I let this go, I mean, it's going to destroy my relationship with my children, with my wife, with our people, most importantly with God. And so that was a real linchpin for me to say, I cannot keep going this way.
In the hospital.
And then I did go to the hospital for stress-related illness
on
Christmas Day, which was the other nail in the coffin, almost literally.
Two kids running around. The
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. And so let me say this. If you don't get anything else from me, do not send yourself to the emergency room just because you won't listen. Because people were speaking into my life, and they're like, dude, you can't work 80, 90 hours a week. You can't do this. You got to chill out. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. Rest is for weak people. Here we go. Back to work. You know, that stupid, bonehead male thing.
Rest is for those who don't have to go to the hospital.
That's right. And, I mean, it really took that, like, physical train wreck, which is really common in church planters, but it's avoidable for a lot of guys. And I'm just thankful for me that God got enough of a hold of me in the little bit of obedience I had to listen to him. I mean, had we not dealt with that, we wouldn't be sitting here. Hmm. I wouldn't be sitting anywhere. And just to really, whatever your issue is, whether it's workaholism or being lazy or porn or whatever it is, that there's a thing that chases you, you got to deal with that or it will eat your soul and it will kill your family. Hmm. So if you don't get anything else from me, I mean, get that. So it was a huge challenge for us.
Any other major points of conflict we need to be aware of?
Yeah, I think both of us. You know, we were talking about this last night. I think that church planting, like the process, not in theory, not what the books think, not what you say, but when you're in the process, what's really inside, all the sinfulness, all the good, it just comes out. In some form or fashion. And so, you know, when that, and you know, and then when, you know, the spiritual things come in, you're like, spiritual gifts really start to come out. If somebody's got prophecy of any sort or wants to say anything that's maybe disagreeable in some form or fashion. Because, you know, in the early on, it was just us. A lot of it is talking through things, working through things. He had somebody and they went, they had somebody and they left, you know, and so... I think it's hard as a female to sit as you will oftentimes and be the sounding board for your husband. I mean, I'm not trained in church planting. You just know the context. You know the people. You hear the stuff. You know, then there are a lot of decisions, though he has a group of elders now, you know, you're still a sounding board no matter. And, you know, whether it was saying you're working too much, you know, and those types of things are just things in general. I think when the personalities really come out that you know, you're inevitably going to conflict. But I think even the harder part there is listening and supporting, even in things that you don't think are good ideas. Mm. You know, because, I mean, it's not that I make the decisions by any means. But, you know, if I'm the sounding board and I say, I just don't think that's a good idea, mm-hmm. I don't like that or whatever, right. I have concerns about that person, you know, or whatever it may be, still supporting even in the times of yeah. I told you so.
But sharing and those big concerns as, yeah. as well.
Yeah, and you know, and so eventually, I mean, you do conflict, but you don't have brawls or anything. It just kind of makes life interesting. We kind of, mm-hmm. We kind of like conflict in some ways.
Yeah,
we don't fight, but it makes things interesting. I mean, you have more to add on that.
Well, I think the thing I kept thinking of this picture when you were talking. This old cheesy. This is actually it's not even cheesy. It's good. The kids ministry illustration of the tube of toothpaste. That church planting will squeeze your tube of toothpaste. And whatever's in there will come out, whether it's good or whether it's bad. And so one of the things that we, like, it just brings it to the surface. Mm-hmm. So you could write a whole article or something on church planting as sanctification, that God has taught me stuff because of this process that I would have never learned any other way. Mm-hmm. So as gritty and dirty as we make it sound, which is not even intentional, we're just being ourselves, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. However, you do not go into this buying a black T-shirt and a pair of glasses and say, I'm going to be the next big church planter. Like, those guys last 6 months and they are burned out and they're back at home on their mom's couch. You go into this because you're called to do it. And that's one of the few things that'll get you through, because whatever's going to squeeze, I mean, it's going to squeeze it out. And there were days when we were already successful that I was like, dude, I am quitting this and I'm getting a job. Like, I don't even want to do this anymore. And that's after you're successful.
Yeah.
So it's the whole notion of, no, we're called to do this. And in spite of the challenges, we got to press on, because this is God's deal. It's not our deal.
And I think that's true, because the other challenge, aside from interpersonal, is, you know, when you... I know this has at least been my experience with the church plant. It is, you know, in a lot of ways, it's your baby. I mean, you know, it's what you spend night and day and, you know, every day, and you put your heart and your soul into it, and you just have a lot more wrapped up to it than if you just move in church and take the pastorate group of people you don't know. I mean, everyone comes to the church you do know. And what really gets hard, and I'm sure everyone in the pastorate would say this, is when it's criticized or he's criticized, right. You know, and it makes win to me.
Yeah. So, like, if something with the ministry is criticized, you see it as a reflection on.
Well, yeah, because you know, when what you attract in church plant. I mean, I'm sure in every church you've got the people that talk a lot, and they might disagree with this, might disagree with that, may cause a lot of problems for the pastors or whatever. But what we have in church plants are those with large opinions that want to change everything. You know, other in churches, they don't want change. Well, here it's like, let me tell you what you need to do. And, you know, everything, part of you wants to scream, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't even know the context. You don't have any idea. But, you know, you don't say that. It is part of sanctification. But then, you know, when there's just something about it that when he is criticized or, you know, and people are talking or just handling conflicts badly, they don't come straight to, you know, him, or, you know, you overhear something. It's just, you know, it's been hard for me. Yeah. And, you know, I just kind of had to come to a point where I had to say, you know, there are just some things I can't talk about.
Yeah. And I think that you guys brought up a really good point about, with the toothpaste illustration. I mean, in all walks of ministry and life, there's going to be spiritual opposition. But I think that when you're involved in mission work, and you're on the front lines doing evangelism, you're working to penetrate the kingdom of darkness with the gospel. That's when the enemy obviously is going to fire the attacks more so, because you're right there, you know, in the thick of it. I don't think it's surprising that church planters and their families go through these difficulties. I think the evil one does use those as moments to capitalize on them. Let's change gears and let's talk about another question, and that is raising children in a church planting family. When you guys started, your first one was just born, and since then you guys have had two. one on the way. And what's that like, raising, you know, church
planting? Let me start on that because I'll probably have less to say. Because I don't know anything about kids. No, I'm just kidding. Just because she spends the most time with them. Here's what I love. My kids love to go to church. They love it. And that was one of my goals that I had set out with in the beginning. I want to plant a church where my kids love to go. Because I had heard so many horror stories of, like, being a pastor was the worst thing that ever happened. You know, my dad was a pastor and I hate the church and blah, blah, blah. And our kids are totally the opposite. My son, at 4 years old, is taking drum lessons because he is convinced that he is already a part of the church band. And we try to tell those, I'm in the band. I got to, you know, and
he
gets up there.
He stands almost on the stage.
So if you came to our church, you'd see what we're talking about. It's just hilarious. And to hear them, like, singing worship songs in the back of the van and that kind of stuff. So up to this point, mission accomplished. Like, they love it. And the other thing, too, is church, like, ministry for us, it's not what I do. It's who we are. And that's part of why it makes it hard to be a workaholic, because it's like, I'm never not doing this. I'm always, somebody's at the house, I'm sending an email, I'm on the phone or whatever. There's a wicked, evil, idolatrous side to that needs to be repented of. But there's a really rich side of that our kids, everywhere we go, they're like, I don't think that guy knows Jesus. Which makes for some awkward moments at the gumbo restaurant, which we just had. But that's just beautiful, man. I mean, they're never going to have a time when they don't remember, like, going to church in a school building, you know, or something, you know. And it's like, it's just like, mission is, it's just, we just, that's who we are. And so to have that, like, almost, you know, it's not a very Western way to live. That's a very Eastern thought, but, like, that's just so rich that our kids are immersed in this world. So it's huge.
Lauren, from the wife's perspective, what's it like raising children in a church planting family?
It's the only thing I know. Yeah. So I don't know that it would be any different. I mean, it's a lifestyle that, you know, we're very comfortable with. I mean, as far as we've always gone to church early, you know, they get to be kind of part of it. Nathan's now at an age where he's helping with the, you know, putting things up. Now, granted, he's only four, so he's not, like, moving mountains. But he's very excited about what he's doing. But they do. They love to go to church. We were on the way here. It's interesting that, you know, in a good way, you define what church is to them, because the church that you do, all the aesthetic elements from that to, you know, the service, everything about it. We went to church with my mom last week, and Nathan's having conniptions. He's like, where's the drums?
This is a non-instrumental Church of Christ.
Yeah.
He's like,
so I don't think they have a band.
Flipping out.
No,
but where is the band?
Someone else gets up and preaching, and Annalise says, I thought that was going to be you. And, you know, and say, so, like, their notion of what church is, you know, maybe they assume they're front and center because their dad is front and center, you know. But our church is, I mean, I'm sure everyone goes to various, you know, stylistic churches, but it's very, you know, we're very kid-centered in the sense that, you know, we have a kid-friendly worship, you know, scenario. And so I love it, you know, because obviously it's, in my opinion, I'm like, they're getting the best view of what church is, and thus plays out through our home because, you know, we do it. I mean, they live ministry, and they get kind of a good picture that it's not just a Sunday thing.
And I think that, you know, you mentioned that they're concerned. Nathan at four is concerned about other people knowing Jesus at this stage. You know, I've always said, this is probably not an original thought, that if you're going to be involved in church planning, you need to either have kids or have a dog. And I think you guys have both
of
those.
We got both.
Because they open up conversations all the time. If you're out, you out walk your kids, people stop and talk. You can talk to them. You're out walking your dog, people want to see your dog. And
sure.
And so you know, go get a dog or have babies, and you'll be involved in church planning and be all right. No.
That's
but,
all you need,
but it
you
does
drop
bring
out
up,
of school.
It does bring up a good point in that what they're doing is they're, and this could be done in any context, any kind of ministry context, whereby ministry is very holistic. It's not just a Sunday thing, like they said. But in church planting, because you don't have a lot of the structures already in place that you would have in an established context, that would would sort of extract you from maybe being away from your family. You basically bring the family along with you while you're doing outreach and while you're doing evangelism and while you're, you know, doing all these things. And so it's very commonplace for children to get involved in the process. Let me ask you guys one last question, because we want to have about 20 minutes left for people to ask Q&A as well. Just kind of to summarize these thoughts that we've been talking about, what would you guys say would be the steps necessary to keep the family healthy while on the field? What are some things that the family needs to do to stay healthy?
Would you start, and then I'll close. You got some?
That is such a broad question for me. I think, you know, just that life is, and this would be more my role, that your home stays fun amidst a great deal of what can be chaos. I mean, we're at a pretty smooth pace right now. We're 3+ years into it, and, you know, the church is at a good pace. But, you know, Dustin, you know how he is. Things don't stay at a slow pace for
right,
long.
Yeah.
You know, he gets bored, and so
got to start something else. That's right.
He graduated, said it was going to be calm. I said, no, it won't.
It got worse.
And he decides a month and a half later to start a second service. So, you know, up goes the swirl of stuff again. And so my place is just kind of shifting on the fly constantly, but keeping, you know, things steady, keeping things fun, keeping a general pace amidst kind of his schedule that, you know, fortunately he's able to, you know, he is able to do his schedule. However, I mean, today he was at home mowing the grass because we're trying to show our house to sell, you know, and so.
Right. But I'll be up late tonight working on my sermon.
But, you know, I think for me, it's that, and, you know, and just kind of manning the kids. And, you know, and from a logistics standpoint, what it meant for the church, that's our home. Mm-hmm. But because we do it all, what is in the church comes into our house all the time. You can tell by the tracks on our carpet. but is that as a female, you're not, and you, if you plant, you define this. You get to decide what your role is, what it's going to look like, what it's going to smell like, taste like, and feel like. And you don't have to give in to any expectations that come along.
There's no expectation for you to play the piano, take care of the kids, and work in the nursery at the same
time.
Wear
turtlenecks.
No. Not that there's anything wrong with turtlenecks.
No, but, and so you, it's what Dustin's always said, you know, you create the DNA.
Right.
And so I am as involved or uninvolved as I want to be. I'm typically not I like to kind of have a lot going on myself, too. So I like to be involved. But, you know, when it's too much, you have to know, you know, this is just too much. And I can't keep up with this. I can't meet with people like I used to. I have 3 kids and we're doing school now. You know, I can't do that. And so that's, I think, having very firm boundaries, knowing what you can do, what you can't do, being able to say no. And for your sanity, my sanity, what I encountered a lot along the way was, and what I've come out with, I just shared this last month at our women's thing, is knowing what you know and not apologizing for it. You know, I would encourage every woman that's going into it, regardless of whether you've taken classes, regardless of whether you enjoyed or not, to just kind of take your own theological journey, to know what you believe and why you believe, because those that come along that do want to criticize, or those that want to talk with you about it, because there's lots of females that have done that with me, call me on the phone, and, you know, we're stepping out of the church, but, you know, I had these concerns, and they just lied into somebody. It's not your job to fix those things, you know, it's not mine. And so I think all of those kinds of things kept me able to walk away from it when I needed to and just be a wife and a mom, because ultimately my job is him and the kids.
Very good. Other things you'd add to keep the family healthy?
I'll put it in one word: listen. You need to listen. And this is what you need to listen to. You need to listen to God. I tend to be more on the quote from Driscoll on this one. A charismatic with a seatbelt. I have no problem saying that God, here's what God is telling me. Not like, whoo, it's authoritative and I'm a cult leader. But like, here's what I feel like the Spirit is leading me to through inward impressions or whatever. And it's always in line with the Scripture, et cetera, et cetera. But if you get the sense that God is telling you, you need to stop being a blockhead and you need to slow down and you need to care for your family and you don't need to go do this today, you need to take the day off and you need to find out why is it that your son, every time you leave the house, says, Dad, are you going to work today? Dad, are you going to work today? Because a lot of times to me, God is trying to tell me stuff all day long and I'm just tuning him out. And just that notion of listening to what is God trying to tell me, of course, through the Scriptures, but also circumstantially and through the voice of my kids and that kind of stuff. If I would have done that more early on, I would have not have gone to the hospital. I would have not, you know, lost. And I'm just thankful that my kids are so young, they won't remember, and I've kind of got my business together now. And that was grace to me that I was really learning these hard lessons when they won't have any memories. But that's huge. Listen to God. Listen to your wife. Sometimes your wife, if you got a wife like mine, she'll just be like, look, you're killing our family. You got to stop working all the time. But some of your wives are not like that. And you're going to have to pick up on those signals. And you're going to have to listen more closely to her. And you need to figure out who your family is. Don't try to go live our script. Who is your family? Just like she was saying. And you listen to that. And then finally, I think, just kind of listen to your context. I mean, like any church planter that's worth his salt, they are a missionary. It is no different than going overseas. It's just that our context is here. And listen to what are those natives saying, and what are the good things in their family life that you can connect with them on, and then what are the ways that you need to build the counterculture within your suburb or your neighborhood or whatever. And kind of use all that concept of listening to speak truth and life through your family into their family. So,
all right.
That's us.
Very good. We got 15 minutes left. Who's got the first question? And I'll repeat the questions for the audio and the video as well, since you don't have a mic. Who's got the first question? All right. So basically, the question was: you started out, had a good start, then things, you know, it's already kind of a challenge at the beginning, and then kind of goes down to half and the number of folks that are showing up. And so if you guys can
let me speak to it. I'll try to be as brief as I can on these answers so we can get as many questions in as we can. And that's what we'll try to do. The way I handled it was wrong. I about had a nervous breakdown, to be honest with you. That's why I went to the hospital. Not just because my body hurt all over because my acid reflux was so bad. They thought I had a gallstone. What I should have done was I should have listened to God, just like I said. And I do think you got to be careful with that whole notion of sacrifice, because you absolutely do have to sacrifice or you will not be effective. I mean, if you read missionary stories, dude, every one of those people puts their family on the line in some way. However, one of the things that we've learned from missions history is not everything they did, just like not everything I did, was right. And so you got to navigate that, just like I said, and that's not being relativistic and postmodern, but you got to find out what's right for your family. And where does sacrifice become idolatry? And God and the good people around you will help you discern that answer.
Okay. For our home, though, I didn't. This may be completely off. I didn't feel sacrifice, and I didn't feel the hit. It bothered him a lot, but I think a lot of it had to do with expectations, and you know, and the issues that come when your expectations aren't met, because the thing he kept going to and we kept having discussions about in our house is take who you got and you pastor them and you don't worry about the 20, the 30, the 40 that you want there. You know?
Yeah. Very good. All right. Someone else? Another question? Good question. So the question, for those of you who didn't hear it, church has sent out already two church planting teams. What have been some of the things that have been done to prepare those teams, and what has the church done to send them out and be involved?
It's funny. I'm going to start every one of these. I just won't say it after this one. What I did then is not what I would do now.
No, we did find it.
No, yeah, we didn't kill those guys.
I see a book coming out, All the Things You Should Do.
Yeah, we've talked about it. 10 things, here's how not to plant a church. At that point, it was real organic and relational. I mean, these were guys that, I mean, they were my right-hand men. And so, I mean, we knew each other super well. James was my other elder. Matt was my intern. And so a lot of it was kind of Paul and Timothy as you go. Yeah, well, like they're at my house, and here's what I learned, and don't do this, and do more of that. Now what we're doing is we're actually starting our own school, the Crossing School of Missional Ministry that JD and I and Matt and others are thinking a lot about, that will be a more systematic process that will basically support church planting at three levels. There'll be guys that are like, you know, that we send money and plants and people and all kinds of resources, and then others that we kind of, it is more of a bless and send. Just because at the rate we're going and in a seminary town, I mean, I've got 8 guys interested in church planting. I can't fully fund all those guys. So trying to figure out how can we do something for everybody that fits the mold. If you want to talk about that more later,
we can. But part of it was seeing the process completed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see.
Yeah, they all had some kind of process with obstacles, even then.
And I'll even add one thing that I've been really impressed with Dustin's leadership is that in every Sunday morning worship gathering, everyone, there's a time of prayer, and we specifically pray for our missionaries that we've sent out. And that's been going on, well, since they've gone out every mm-hmm. Sunday. And every newsletter that goes out each week, email, it has them in there to be praying for them as well. Okay, I think the first question was, how did the church relate to the established churches? Was that right?
Existing churches, yeah.
Okay, did you get that?
Linden Baptist Church.
Yeah, it was mixed, to be honest with you. Some of them were extremely excited and were like, man, we're all doing the same work. We're, you know, these people are just after a different kind of person. Other people, not so much. And I don't have time to tell you all that story, but you don't need to hear it anyway. And so I think whenever you go and do what you go and do, you just need to know that. And church plant makes you tough. I mean, if you're, I feel like I'm like going to punch somebody. I sound like a drill sergeant. I'm really not even that way. It's the mountain bike. That's what it was. I fell off the other day. I'm like,
he's still mad about that.
I am. But you do have to have somewhat of a thick skin. I mean, if you're in this to, like, please people, you're in the wrong game. And so to think through that some people will be behind us and that we will work together and we will be brothers. And then other people, because of their own insecurity, their sin will come against you. So what I would counsel real quickly is you try to be as gracious and as humble and as loving and as big kingdom as your theology and conscience will permit you to be. Of course, there's limits to that even. And try to be a blessing to those churches. And now we have good relationships, even with the one church that was against kind of what we're doing, a good relationship now. But it took time for there to be redemption.
And keeping the focus on reaching unbelievers
yeah.
and not stealing sheep.
Yeah, that's right. That's good.
Is paramount.
That's good.
Good question. Other questions?
That's a very good question.
Okay, how much does the leader's personality play into the overall effectiveness, success, I guess you could say, if you will?
This is going to sound a lot more... It's interesting, man, because I'm a big sovereignty guy, but I'm also a human responsibility guy. And for whatever reason, God has ordained ends, and He's also ordained means to get the ends done. And I think one of those means is that key leader. And also the leaders that key leader calls around himself. So I would say it's pretty important. But here's what's interesting with me is when I started planting the church, I don't know how I did it. I mean, to look back at my life, I was like, I didn't really feel like I knew exactly what. Now, of course, I did. But looking at where God has brought me, I've lost 50 pounds in the past 6 months. I've seen like my health, my life, my leadership. God has just done something crazy in my life to see this journey that I've been on. And I share that with you guys for this reason, that if you feel extremely unqualified at this point, you need to think that through. If it's God saying, I'm giving you this feeling and it's going to help you depend upon me and remain humble, that's a good place to be. That's a good place to be. But if you're like, I don't know if I can do it, and everybody that assesses me doesn't know that I can do it either, you need to be careful. Because you don't want to get into this if you're not really called to do it. so I would be careful to navigate that. I don't know if that's helpful or not. Is that helpful? Okay. Hang on one second. I'm sorry. I was really trying to pay attention to his question as she was talking
to me. I love it. I'll sing a solo during these this interlude.
Mm-hmm. If I didn't answer that, hang on one second. If I didn't answer that, ask me later. You want me to say that?
Did you want to add something to it?
Do you want to set the record straight?
I'm confused. If you change the word success to type of church that you have, you would get a more accurate presentation, because some of the people that we've sent out, they have different personalities. And it's where you see it is not necessarily in a success definition, but in the type of church that it is. James in New Orleans, you can't get a bigger personality than James, and his church is going to very much reflect that. A smaller personality, sweeter spoken, just purely pastoral, he's a leader. His strongest gifting by far is not pastoring. He's a leader, and what's going on reflects that. But we had people that had thought about going out that I would never thought that they probably wouldn't even get to 60 to 100 people. Their personality reflects that. Does that make more sense? Because personality plays a tremendous amount into it. But it doesn't necessarily define successful as much as what it's going to look like.
Yeah, does that make sense? Because that whole success conversation is a long conversation. One guy can be completely successful at 25, and this other guy over here could be at 2,500, but because he's not trying to do what God's really calling him to do, he wouldn't be a success. Does that make sense? My definition of success is faithfulness.
That's a good
point. And personality.
Good point.
You know, you have a bigger definition of success than some people would.
Much broader.
Yeah.
Because some people are only like, they're only success if they're 1,000 people. And I think that's, so.
Well, I'll tell you what, I wish we can continue on, but we're going to have to wrap things up because we know that there are some little ones that need to be picked up as well. Let me just encourage you again, ladies, if you did not pick up one of these resources at the table, to do so before you leave here tonight. And also want to encourage you to really consider getting involved in the Nehemiah Project here. It's a great opportunity for you as a student.
I did
that. That's right.
I was Nehemiah.
I'm still corrupting people.
That's
and
right.
We've got an internship program set up. Even if you're considering going with the IMB, we'd like to get you involved in some cross-cultural internship, church planning experience while you're here so you can get some hands-on training. And I'd like to talk to any of you anytime. Contact the Church Planning Center. Send me an email. Send Carrie an email. And while you send her an email, thank her for putting all this together. She's actually in Texas tonight for a wedding this weekend with her sister. And so keep us in touch. We want to be a part of helping you in the journey, helping equip you to be who God has called you to be in this area of missions and service for His kingdom. And anything that we can do to help you out, we want to do that. Let me close this in prayer.
Real quick, before you do that, I won't steal your thunder, I promise.
That's right.
We'll stick around for a few minutes, and if y'all want to have any more questions, we're totally cool with doing that. I don't know the logistics of all of it. And also,
they may hurt us out into the hallway.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's fine. We've got just a little while. And our website, crossinglouisville.com, it's not what it will be, but I'll be posting a bunch of stuff on there, like articles that we've run into and stuff that we produce and that kind of stuff. And I give away all my sermons, all my notes, verse by verse, book of the Bible kind of preacher, stuff that you can take. And if you rip me off, that's fine. Just give me credit. That's what I do with other guys. And I just list who I source. And I think that has been helpful to some other church planters. So if you want any of that stuff, it's all free. Just go download it. So try to help you any way I can.
Let's pray together. Lord, we thank you for our evening. Thank you for providing this for us. We thank you for Dustin and for Laurie Ann, for their family, Father, for their ministry, for their church family. We pray, Lord, that you would have your blessings to be upon them. And Lord, as your word told us at the beginning of the hour about the importance of wisdom and knowledge, I pray that, Father, we would take this wisdom, this knowledge that we've just gained tonight, and that, Lord, you would use it to shape our hearts, to challenge us, to shape our families. That, Lord, we would keep you first. We would allow you to guide us in all that we do, recognizing that the enemy is out there, but, Father, you are greater. And that, Father, we would trust in you and lean not into our own understanding. Father, I ask your blessings on these that are here tonight. I pray that you'd encourage them and that you would multiply their labors for your glory, that throughout North America and throughout the world, they would be about multiplying disciples and leaders and churches. And we ask all this in Christ's name.